Okay, our next speaker is going to discuss bridging the gap without cables. National Hockey League reps get a clear shot at goal with 60 gig wireless. So Jim Duchette is going to present this paper, and he is CEO of Videovation Corporation. Jim has 20 years of experience providing video and data communication systems to government, broadcast, Fortune 500, and medical clients on a global level. Former Senior Vice President and Principal at Multidyne Video and Fiber Systems, Mr. Duchette has a Master of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from NYU Polytech. Earlier in his career as a project engineer at Micra Corporation, Jim designed hybrid microelectronics for military and aerospace video guidance systems. In addition, Jim has authored numerous articles and white papers, including a chapter on fiber optic transmission systems in the National Association of Broadcasters Engineering Handbook. Jim rounds out his design and implementation expertise as a co-author of two patents on video fiber optic communication. Come on up.
Thanks, John. Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for that introduction, John. Good to see you. Let me just start. Are there any hockey fans here in the room? Show of hands. Shout out some teams. What's your team?
What's my team? Canada, of course.
Well, the Olympics. You were rooting for Canada in the Olympics.
Yes.
What other team? What team do you like? Uh-oh. I'm from New York. I'm a frustrated Ranger fan. But in 2012, when the Devils beat the Rangers, the enemy of my enemy, I became a Kings fan. So it's good. We have some hockey fans. So 3 years ago at NAB, Grant Nodine, the senior VP of the National Hockey League, approached us here on the show floor, and he saw some of our camera technology and some of our wireless technology, and he said, I need a camera in the goal to get a better shot of the goal line. So that started the discovery process. I've always felt throughout my career that I like to solve problems. The engineering teams that I've put together over the years, we love the never been done before. So no one ever put a wireless camera inside of a hockey goal. They tried running AC power under the ice, coaxes under the ice. Didn't work out so well with water and ice. So that led us into this project. So as engineers, what's our first step? We have to identify the client's pain point. What's the problem? We have to do a lot of listening. I like to talk a lot, so sometimes I struggle with the listening part, but I'll just be quiet, listen to the client, and Grant was very forthcoming with his problem. He said, some calls are being made poorly. The refs, it's not the ref's fault, they just can't see the puck. And this is an example of that. Can you tell whether that puck's in or out? I mean, this is typical. They have overhead cameras. The puck might be under the goalie right here. Is it over the line? Is it not, you know, you can't tell. So Grant wanted a camera that could sit in the back of the goal, to give them an alternative angle. It's obviously a hostile environment. Players, you know, four 250-pound, 6'1" players. Well, unless it's Chara, what is he, 7 feet tall? And he's 400 pounds? Yeah, he comes in the goal. The goal smashes into the boards, and the camera's supposed to survive. Then 105-mile-an-hour slap shot. So we had no power available, no cables. They wanted low latency. I see George Hoover here. You know, you don't want a compressed video feed in your truck. You want unadulterated, no encoding, no compression. Often enough, it does go on the air. If there is a critical call, the director will make that call in the NAP truck or whoever's doing the game that night, whether or not to put that footage on the air. I obviously like it when it goes on the air, that's the ROI to the NHL, so part of the process. So once we discover that the client's pain point, the benefit with the NHL is that the client knew they had a problem. A lot of times you come in with a new toy, a new technology. Client doesn't know they need it. So you have to educate them, explain how it's going to improve their workflow, how it's going to save them money, improve their bottom line. In this case, Grant knew what he needed. He had a clear vision of what he wanted. And we sat down in New York at the conference table with Grant, one of my engineers, one of his engineers. We locked the doors for 4 hours, and we designed this system. But the big issues are like what type of technology to use, what spectrum to use, weigh the different trade-offs. Initially, we had proposed a 5 gigahertz system, and that had the benefit of being omnidirectional. Grant had seen some technology in our booth of 60 gigahertz, which is more directional. So some of the more traditional frequencies out there are 2.4 gig. We try to stay away from that because that's widely used by Wi-Fi. 5 gig is used by some Wi-Fi, 802.11. A lot of the broadcasters will use the 5 gig for their wireless camera rigs. And we make a 5 gig camera system. So one of the first solutions I demoed to Grant was a 5 gig system. He's like, no, that's not going to work. Spectator cell phones, congestion, difficulty in frequency coordinating. I know NEP, you guys probably use other bands, other licensed bands to avoid some of this, but there were cost concerns. You know, there are wireless systems that will use other bands that are $100,000, so that was kind of off the table. But there were a few incidents where they had a major frequency coordination issue where a 5 gig VoIP system interfered with some of the camera systems, some of the telemetry in the venues, the scoreboards were controlled by 5 gig. So Grant made it very clear early on that 5 gig really was not the frequency of choice. And during the Stanley Cup final in Vancouver, this may be 5 or 6 years ago, this happened in the middle of the game, and no one could shut it off. So the horn went off. It's a Sunday night game. The union electricians weren't on site anymore. Somebody had to call an electrician, get him in, to flip the circuit breaker to shut the horn off because the telemetry was shut down. So if you've heard a hockey horn, I've had the horn go off 10 feet from me while I've been up top. It hurts. It hurts. So that was just an example that Grant gave of what we wanted to try to avoid. So that led us to 60 gigahertz. So let me just skip ahead here. I know we're limited on time. You know, the other disadvantage too is the lower frequency bands. You're limited to like a 20 megahertz channel, or maybe multiple 20 meg channels, maybe 80 megs, and a 1.5 gigabit per second native HDSDI signal. How do you get it through a 20 meg pipe? Some vendors were like, well, we encode or we bit prioritize. So there's technologies out there that will either do heavy encoding or compression. And granted, we do use these technologies if it's warranted for the application. But this just shows you some of the difficulties in this type of scenario, designing a wireless system. Do we go licensed or unlicensed? And in licensed, you have heavier government regulations, but the benefit to that is you have less usage or controlled usage. Usually there's fees associated. Some bands, the fees are more or less. They call it lightly licensed fees or heavily licensed fees. Unlicensed, it's minimal regulation, but then everyone jumps on. It's free. So that causes high congestion, and it's usually free. The beauty of 60 gigs is it's both worlds. It's unlicensed, but because of its directionality, which I'll get to, it makes it highly desirable. So the 2 gig to 40 gig band is pretty much overly utilized. So we need to get out of that band. So a few years back, the FCC started releasing spectrum up here in the V and the E bands. And we sit right here in this V-band, the 60-gig band. And these upper bands in the E-range here, these have some licensings associated with them. But because of the directionality of the 60 gigs, you really don't need to worry about it being an unlicensed band. So it's globally unlicensed. There's we call it the millimeter wave frequency band, or V-band, to be more specific. But it is a point-to-point communication. So you're not going to put this on the back of a camera and have a cameraman moving around on a football field or in a basketball stadium. You know, it's from a fixed point to another fixed point. In our case, the hockey goal, if you're a real fan, you know the play's not dead even if the goal comes up on its pins. So the goal can move about 10 degrees. So we had to compensate for that, making a wider transmission beam, and we maintain lock as the goal rocks and rolls. But if it comes off the pins, the play is dead. So we had to, you know, so we're near point to point. We got a little bit of movement. It's globally allocated spectrum. 70 and 80 and 90 are commonly used. All these bands are used a lot for cellular backhaul, getting bandwidth from a cell site back to the central office. The benefit of 60 is it's less susceptible to rain fade or fog fade. 70, 80, and 90 will go further, but you have to be more careful about rain fade in more tropical, you might not want to put a long 90 gig run in Florida, for let's say. Southern California would probably be fine. And again, all these technologies, because of the very short wavelength, they're very, very directional. And there's minimal congestion. So why did we choose 60? As I mentioned, less susceptible to rain fade. In the case of the hockey, there's not a lot of rain precipitation. There might be some ice flying around, some snow, but that doesn't impede our transmission. Because of the narrow beam, it doesn't cause any interference, nor is it susceptible to interference. I'm gonna speed up here a little bit because we got quite a bit to cover. We have a 7 gig bandwidth in the band, so that's how we're able to put uncompressed HDSDI through the 60 gig link. 100% uncompressed, no encoding, there's no voodoo. You know, it's if you give us 422, that's what comes through. We don't do 420 or manipulate the encoding or bit reduction or manipulations in the resolution. And zero latency, that was very important too. You know, if we had multiple frames of latency, the video would become out of sync with the game clock. So the game clock is embedded into time code, and that's synchronized with the footage. You can see not everyone's in the market for a hockey goal camera. These are images along the side of our more generic point-to-point 60 gig links. Let me keep going here. Here's some of here's the UK specification. Different FCC license exempt specs. So it's around the world. There's not a single country that is exempt. 60 gig, you know. So if you bought a bunch of these, George, you could use them anywhere in the world. Let me keep going here. There's a curious phenomenon in the 60 gig band. Causes excitement in oxygen molecules. So what it does is oxygen causes attenuation. So we're limited to about a kilometer. The DoD and military applications, they like radios that don't emit beyond their target. So if they want to beam a signal to that mountaintop, they don't want to give away their position to the enemy. So the signal will reach the intended target, and then maybe we'll go another half a kilometer beyond the target, as opposed to other systems that will give away your position, and a missile may try, you know, an RF snooping missile may come in and give you a very bad day. So for DoD applications, the signal can't travel far beyond its intended target. Here's a little chart that just shows you some examples. A 2.4 gig Wi-Fi, a typical flat panel antenna, it's like 120 degree. You can do omnidirectional with the Wi-Fi bands. But just to show you the frequencies, how you get more and more directionality the higher up you go in frequency. Again, there's some exceptions. You know, it depends on the type of the antenna. Obviously, with the NHL, we put it a very small wide aperture antenna to do 20 degrees. But just a kind of rule of thumb. And this kind of shows you here, too. So here's the 1 kilometer length, the intended target. We only propagate, you know, 2.5 kilometers, so we're not giving away our position. Down here, you see 24 gigs and 2.4 gigs. reaching out to, here it is, 32 kilometers. So that's not exactly stealthy RF technology. So because of its directionality and this oxygen absorption stealth mode, let's call it, you don't necessarily have to encrypt. You have to worry about polarization. When we were training the NHL team and the integration team, we had them line up the unit with the goal line. You know, if you had it 90 degrees out of polarization, the camera's not going to work. So that's one thing you have to be careful. We can do systems single channel, dual channel, bidirectional. Let's see. But, you know, hockey's one of my favorite subjects. I really enjoy working with the NHL, but there's other applications. It's very helpful when you don't have access to a fiber. Or the most important part or the most expensive part of any kind of a transmission system is usually the first mile and the last mile. It's getting to the network and getting off the network. Not everyone has a high-speed pop in their building. It's getting to the central office. So 60 gigs, in the case of the National Hockey League, their problem spot was getting from the hockey goal to the rafter infrastructure above the in the ceiling above the goal. So that was their first mile, as it were. So you can see your first mile, last mile, military sports, pro AV, cellular backhaul, uncompressed. We have gigabit Ethernet versions, too. If a client, you know, say the NHL wanted to put multiple compressed videos on there, we could have given them an Ethernet, bidirectional Ethernet over 60 gig. Here's my buddy Jonathan Quick, all-star rookie goalie of the LA Kings. That's a shot actually from our camera during the playoffs in 2012. Let me just skip ahead here. There's a picture of the thing. Here it is with its protective sleeve. So this sits in the back of the goal. There's a quick release mount. We have these pins. So an NHL technician can go into the goal during a TV timeout, pop this thing in and out, boom, ready to go. The little RF horn that I spoke about is right here in the top, and the camera is in the bottom. These units can run, there's internal lithium ion batteries. They'll run about 6-7 hours off their internal batteries. We have an auxiliary battery so they can run 12-14 hours. I have a slide on that, why we needed that. Grant knew that he needed that. So let me just skip ahead. Had to withstand 105 mile an hour hockey puck. Your boy Charo at the 2012 All-Star game actually broke the record. It was 108.2 slap shot, because he's so tall, he's allowed to have an extra long stick, so he's got better leverage. He's an animal, that guy. I'm not a Bruins fan, but he fascinates me. I'm a more of a Drew Doughty guy, you know, but we'll talk later. The highest hockey venue, Madison Square Garden, where the Minnesota Wild play. There's a couple of venues where the infrastructure is about 150 feet off the ice. We have some attenuation adjustments on our radio to optimize. A 30-foot span, we have an automatic gain, but then we have some fine-tune adjustments to optimize the radio for the height of the ceiling. The NHL learned early on that a piece of steel going across the microwave beam was not so good, even though we told them, you know, we'll blame it on the first integration team. It was a learning process, you know. We did a lot of training. I've never worked so hard in my life these last 3 years, but I've never had this much fun. You know, we just did something that had never been done before. You know, it was just such a great achievement. When we see that replay of the puck coming in off from our camera, I just get goosebumps. So let me keep going. So they wanted a 720p. They wanted progressive 720p 5994. Some of the trucks don't have enough transcoders. So the overhead cameras are 1080i. These we went with 720p. So we don't have too much of progressive. So the truck needs to transcode. Also, this is the more close-up shot. So, you know, we have progressive. We have less distortion. With high motion. needed to withstand temperature. Early on, we realized accidentally we created a perfect storm inside the unit. We were actually developing a rain cloud inside. You have cold ice on the bottom dome and a warm transmitter on the back, and it's relatively airtight, but moisture would get inside, and we would get condensation on the dome. So one of the first modifications, let's call it, that we did was to put a fan. All it did was, we had environmental chambers, trunks of ice, trying to simulate hockey conditions in the lab. Took us a couple of weeks to figure it out, but just putting a little fan down adjacent to the camera lens kept air moving across the dome, and if the air is moving, the water molecules can't stick to the dome. So we finally figured that out. It was all part of the process. We can actually run longer now. We're probably more like 12 to 14 hours. So does anybody know when the longest hockey game occurred? This is a little hint. It was 116 minutes. Now, it doesn't sound very long, but, you know, hockey is three 20-minute periods, and if it's the playoffs, there's no shootout. They just play to the death. It plays, they'll play all night till somebody scores. It was in 1933, the Detroit Red Wings versus the Montreal Maroons. So this came up in the discovery process. So, you know, hey, how many batteries can you fit in there? And they wanted it a certain size. So we couldn't double up on the lithium ion battery. So there's a battery bag hidden back here. On important games, on a Saturday night game, or when the Leafs are playing the Red Wings, they'll load the goal up with all the cameras. These cameras, I think, are typically running on a 5-gig circuit, so it's good that we weren't using 5-gig. So that was one consideration. Our 60-gig signal's shooting straight up at the ceiling. This guy probably has a receiver out in the truck bay. Then the Associated Press guys will have an SLR. It's not in the housing there right now in this photo, but an SLR, a remote-triggered SLR, will sit. Obviously, you know, we helped the league set the iris on these things, and we were like, what are these flashes all the time? You know, at first we're like, is there something wrong with the camera? What is going on with these flashes? We learned through discovery process that there's hundreds of flashes above the ice, and the photographers, the still photographers, triggered the flashes remotely. So we went with a manually adjusted iris control. And in broadcast, that's the way to do it anyway. You don't want an automatic iris. The league was thinking, well, why don't we do automatic? Then the technicians don't have to set the iris. Usually the guys in the trucks, George's guys, will let their arena guys know, hey, your cameras are overexposed. There's something wrong there. You got to go in there and adjust those. So if they don't have a monitor or a scope, the truck, they'll graciously help them out. They'll say, hey, your video looks a little off there. You want to... So they'll adjust it. So there is an iris control. So this is like a typical full boat, and you see how it's all padded here? And safety was a big consideration, but then you look at this camera here, I see a big piece of metal here, all this exposed, but at least our camera's safe. So I can sleep at night that I won't cause a $50 million a year player to get hurt or, you know. So you can see our camera right there. You know, it's the coffee can sized. You can see it from above too in the overhead cam. Here's a clear shot of the goal. So, you know, they wanted a little coverage outside in the crease, and basically where this comes into play, it's the slow speed tricklers that go in the goal. Or in 2012, there was a big pile up in the goal. The horn sound, the refs blew the whistle. Somebody in Toronto saw something they didn't like, and you saw this glove come in and punching the. And the guy, they're very, you know, they'll kick it in. They'll, you know, they're sneaky. You know, they'll do it. You know, it's for the cup. You know, you got to win that cup. So you'll see them, you know, doing some little thing, pushing it in, kicking it in. Unlike soccer, you're not allowed to kick it in. You can kick it out on the open ice. You can kick it ahead, you know, to the side, whatever. But you can't intentionally kick it in the goal. It can deflect off of a skate as long as the skate is not being moved towards the goal. So they wanted a smaller enclosure. Player safety was a consideration. Rugged, clear view of the goal. Funny thing, too, is like, you know, so our first demo, the goalie kept coming back into the goal. We're like, oh, he's going to block the shot. So the goalies, they don't want to take their eye off the puck, you know, but they want to make sure they're centered in the goal. So especially goalie, if he had a black paint, you know, black, I guess if he's on the road, he's in black, come back into the goal and say, what's he doing? He's blocking the shot. And then he would come out. He's feeling where the posts are, but he doesn't want to take his eye off the puck. So we just like, you know, so we get this bird's eye view of the goalie's butt, you know, before every play, you see this butt coming in and out of the frame. So obviously we've had a lot of fun. So this was a cool install. There's probably four venues where we didn't have access. Most venues, 90% of the venues had a catwalk or some sort of access relatively over the goal. Initially, we thought with our 20-degree beam that they'll just mount the receiver dead center over the goal. There's not always a catwalk dead center over the goal. Some catwalks are off to the right, off to the left, a little forward, a little back. So the horn in here actually moves. We have a brake locking mechanism in here. A technician with a small torque wrench will loosen the screws, and then they'll use, they'll actually attach a laser to the RF horn, will sit on top, and then just like this, so we would find, you know, say that's the receiver target, we would align it like that, he'd line it dead on to the receiver, lock with his little torque wrench, boom, that'll stay dead on with the receiver. The receiver will require adjustments as well to make sure it aims at the goal correctly. So in this case, this was at the United Center in Boston, Blackhawks. I'm sorry, in Chicago, Blackhawks. And you see they won some cups, you know, they won last year. There's a rigger out on the steel. Guy was out there for 6 hours. Union guy, we started at 8:30. He didn't come off the steel to 4:30. The spotter handing him stuff with the rope left for 90 minutes to go get a wrench, went to lunch and came back, left the guy out there. You know, union guy, didn't take a bio break, didn't take a lunch break, and he was chewing tobacco the whole time. She's just up there. And he was all night breaking down a Dave Matthews concert, had 5 hours sleep. So he slept in, you see the I-beam, it's on its side, little H. He just slept in the H, he strapped himself in, he took a little nap while he was waiting. He's like, no problem, I'm good. It's like, you need water down there, buddy? I was above on the catwalk. I didn't go. I don't do any heroics. I don't do that. So, but that was a fun install. Just keep going. Some of this stuff I covered. So here's the receiver. I didn't bring a receiver with me. So this unit sits above the rafters. You can see the mount. Everything is, you know, when you're working in rigging, lighting, whatever, safety lanyards are on everything. Some of these venues, I'll go up top and I'll see like a 1,000-pound light without a safety lanyard on it. I'm like, who put that in? But all of our stuff, you know, we train the integration teams to, as part of the kit, put, you know, each component, the bracket, the arm, everything has its own safety lanyard or they're lanyarded together. So if something were to break loose, I'll watch the Grammys and I'll be like, you know, if a Vitovation receiver came flying down from the ceiling at the Staples Center, that would be bad. So safety was always a big concern. So I mentioned the green laser. They didn't want any external antennas. That was the other negative of a 5-gig system. You usually have the external kind of ducktail type antennas and they're usually got rubber around them, but it's just an object that a player could get hurt on or they could get broken, that sort of thing. So that was part of the spec. We introduced the idea of aiming with lasers. Another trick that we use to aim the receivers. The receivers, if you're doing an outside alignment of a 60-gig circuit, we would use rifle sniper scopes to align the units. Lasers don't work very well outdoors, but in a dimly lit, you know, hockey venue, even with full game lights, this very powerful green laser, you're able to see it even with game lights on. Obviously, if the receiver is very close to one of the lights, it's, you know, I've been at games trying to help the ATCs align a camera, and, you know, the crowd's coming in Staples Center, And I'm doing things like this where I'm blocking out the sun and trying, oh, there's the receiver. And, you know, the fans are looking at me, what's wrong with that guy over there, you know? So it's been a lot of fun. It's a very low-powered transmitter. We can go a kilometer with a one milliwatt. We have these units probably at 25% power, or about, less than a third, you know, maybe 0.3 milliwatts. We're not even running them wide open. So you don't really need, because it's such a directional beam, you don't need a tremendous amount of energy. So, you know, 60 gigs was kind of an unknown at the time. And, well, is it safe for humans? Are somebody going to get hurt by this beam? And it's very, very low power. Because of the short wavelength, it doesn't penetrate the human skin. So it's a very safe. Right now I have my cell phone in my pocket. I'm being totally irradiated with this thing. And I got it in my pocket. So it's a very, very safe technology. And then what's it for? It's all about the cup, because it's the cup. And one thing I want to leave you guys with is watch more hockey. It's a great sport. We got a camera back once, and there was actually blood and a piece of a tooth on it. And they will stop the game and find the player's tooth, because they're very superstitious. They save the teeth that they lose. So it's very important. So this is I figured I was going to put the Kings up, but this was last year. It wouldn't have been appropriate to, you know, I had Dustin Brown with the cup, but last night I decided, you know, be politically correct. You know, they technically won the last cup. So we're having a hospitality suite tonight over at the Las Vegas Hilton. We're in suite 8121 in the North Tower. You're all welcome to come. Anybody have any questions, or am I getting the hook?
No hook.
Any questions, folks?
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Oh, do you have a question, sir? Yes, it'll see the puck in the air. We go maybe halfway up the poles, so there are some dead spots left and right. You know, the one in the two hole, if you're a hockey fan, we don't cover. That's above the goalie. The overhead camera gets a better shot at that. Our main goal, our main function was to see the line, give them visibility of the line. And we're a little bit behind the line, so we can kind of see underneath the goalie as he's in the goal. And most goalies, when the shot's coming out, they want to cut down the angle, so they come out of the goal a little bit. So if it trickles between their legs, we catch that shot very, very well. Any other questions, folks? Okay, watch more.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.